Okay, and yet another edition of Addiction and Redemption. As I clear my throat, I mentioned in the last episode that I had just eaten and I had to do like five takes. Well, I've still just eaten because I'm just binge recording. I'm just, when I get inspired, I just will just do a bunch of them in a row because that's sort of the way I roll. So I'm still kind of, you know, digesting. Is that too much information? It might be, but thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. We left off last week, or last week. No, we left off 5 minutes ago with me being in treatment, and I was talking about the archetypes of treatment and the different personalities and how I was not willing to listen. And that guy who was the counselor who looked like Mr. Clean, who said, work the steps or fucking die. And I just wasn't ready. Now, there's a more serious side to this whole story, because I was in rehab for 29 days and I did not get any hope. So there was nothing that made me think that a happy life was possible. That's the key takeaway, is that I stayed there for this long and I remained hopeless. And I actually remember my mom and dad coming to visit me, and they would have like visitor days on Sunday. And I remember just not even, I just didn't know where to begin in how to face them. Like I had no idea. And the immature side of me, the side of me that didn't know how to deal with feelings and emotions, would just get angry and I would like throw a tantrum, and they're just sitting there hurting so badly. Like, what has become of our son? What did we do wrong? And I'm just being kind of an asshole. And it's just because I'm hurting so bad and I don't know what to do with all these feelings. And so this is a whole other side of it. I was hopeless. And the people that stayed sober after rehab, they got hope. They got some semblance of hope while they were in treatment. And they took that hope outside and they did what they were supposed to do and they put their lives back together. But if you don't get that hope, you're screwed. And I wasn't willing to see that there might be something that was greater than me that could help me. I wasn't willing to listen enough. And I remember I went home. They released me and my mom and dad came and got me, and I went home to their house where I was living, and I took like a 3 or 4 hour nap. I was so exhausted just from getting up early and being around all those people all the time, and I just crashed out really hard, and then I woke up and it was maybe about, I don't know, 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening or 7 o'clock in the evening, and I had no place to go. And I had actually, there's a whole side of the story. There's this guy named Chris who I went to high school with, and we used to party, and I had heard this rumor over the course of my partying that he had like found Jesus or something. And I had actually gotten in touch with him as I was really starting to spiral downhill, and he was actually one of the 12-step guys. And so I was in conversation with him a little bit before treatment, but I had lost his phone number. And so I didn't leave with a plan. You're supposed to leave rehab with a plan. And I didn't have a plan. And so I've got no plan, and I get home to my parents and I take this nap and I wake up and they're gone, and I'm up for maybe 45 minutes or an hour, and like I said, there's no hope. There's nothing inside of me that tells me living life differently is worth it or is even possible. And I don't really want to be better. I just wanted to stay sick. And there were actually bottles of wine in the house. My parents had left some bottles of wine in the wine rack, and I looked over. This is 45 minutes after waking up from my nap. And I looked over, and I grabbed a bottle, and I went, and I opened it, and I drank it. And this is 45 minutes after waking up. So this is like maybe 4 or 5 hours after getting out. And then as soon as I got drunk, what did I want? I wanted more drugs. And so what did I do? I got in a car, And I drove back down to the city and I copped some more dope. And that was it. And I was back off to the races. And I think I called someone, and a friend of mine, Ray, or he called me, and we went out together, and I'm like sitting in the bar downtown Glen Ellyn, like drinking after I got back from the city. And people are like, should you really be drinking? And I'm like, oh, I got it under control, but I didn't. And that is the insidiousness of this thing. And you know, there are people who want to argue against the disease model of addiction and blah 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 blah, and there's a lot of rhetoric, but it really is just this disgusting disease. It's just this god awful disease that you have no control over. I mean, I'm gonna hit on it again. I just couldn't stop. I could not stop. It was impossible to stop, and I was completely insane. And I remember this friend of mine, this girl, she's actually in my brother's class. She's several years younger than me, or a handful of years younger than me. She came and picked me up one day. This is maybe 1 or 2 days after I got out. She came and picked me up, and we went to Taco Bell together. And I just remember it had turned gray. So by now it's like mid-September in Chicago, and it's just not one of those pretty falls. It's kind of like gray. It was just one of those gray days that was kind of chilly. And I remember just sitting at Taco Bell with her and just like trying to be happy, but just not being able to have any joy or hope or anything. And I remember just being so sad. I can feel it all coming back to me right now. How sad I was. And there was no place for me to take that except for back to the city. Back to the west side. Back to the spot, and to just get more drugs that would make me feel better. And my parents had actually thought that I was doing good, because I wouldn't really drink all the time. I would just get high. And when you get high, you get really... It had gotten to the point where I would do heroin, and it would kind of perk me up. And so I would start talking about recovery stuff to my parents and how I meant it. But they didn't know that I was high again. I was still sort of like, it was like I rewound and was back to the happy phase of the dope use. And so I had them fooled for a little bit. But, you know, I very soon after this, ran out of money. Like I think the credit, I can't remember what was happening with the credit cards I was using. Maybe I hadn't, yeah, I can't remember how it went down exactly. It's all such a freaking blur. But I remember, you know, maybe 4 or 5 days after I'd gotten out of treatment, going into my parents' bedroom and taking my great grandmother's wedding ring. And my plan was to drive down to the city to pawn it so that I could get some dope. I was going to sell this like 100-year-old wedding ring for $100 or less, and I was going to take that money and I was going to buy dope. And this is 5 or 6 days after treatment, and that's what happens when you've got no hope, when you've got no God, when you've got nothing in your heart that tells you that living another way is worth it. That's what happens. And I've got nowhere to turn. I've got no one to talk to. There were people around. If I had gone to find them, they would have helped me, but I wasn't willing. I wanted to stay addicted deep, deep, deep down, because I didn't know anything else. This is like 15 years in the making at this point, and I didn't know of another way to live, even though I'd been taught that there was another way. But I didn't like that way. I was too self-righteous to believe that way was worth it or was good. I thought it was stupid. And this is just a testament to the power and the absurdity and the stupidity of the human ego. You see people's human egos, you see the ego of the human being today just fucking up this entire planet because they don't want to be wrong about something. And this is exactly what my ego was doing to me. It was trying to kill me. So this has been a slightly darker episode, I realize. I realize I speak with humor, but there was just so much darkness in all of this. So stay tuned to see what's next. This has been another edition of Addiction and Redemption. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Dave Keenest. Shoot me an email if you'd like, dave@davekeenest.com. Have a beautiful night. Bye-bye.